BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC. Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
Right now.
Adam Buxton's Big Mixtape.
Hey, how you doing, listeners? Oh, boy, what a turbulent week it's been, I tell you. I mean, I'm locked in my shed at the moment. I'm absolutely livid about the fact that our guest this week, Paddy Considine, had to cancel at the last moment. Typical, isn't it? And that's after I made a massive great song and dance about it at the end of last week's show. That's exactly what happened. Smack on the wrist. Never count on anything because someone will always let you down. Paddy was very sorry and sincerely apologetic about having to pull out at the last minute. But we didn't have time to get another guest and we were in a little bit of a pickle. So luckily, someone stepped in, an old friend of mine, and he hosted the show in my stead because I was so, as I said, you know, I'm locked in my shed right now. I locked myself in, you know, just as a gesture of fury when I heard that Paddy had cancelled. But then I couldn't get out again and I was sort of embarrassed. So I ended up just staying here. I'm having quite a lot of fun, actually, just radioing this in over the airwaves for our producer, James. Didn't have to go into London to do the show this week. It's quite nice and relaxing. Just sat here in my bathrobe listening to old podcasts and mixing myself a cocktail. So, hope Ken gets on well. Enjoy the programme.
It's a mixtape, Adam's Big Mixtape. You can listen while you're working or you're eating a grape. It's got two sides and I made it for you. There's some music and some talking and some other bits too. Every week it's a different compilation, determined by a theme or a mood. There's some lively conversation with my interesting guest. I'm hoping that it's going to be quite good. Mixtape, Adam's Big Mixtape. It is suitable for humans or a dog or an ape. It's also ideal for a parent or friend. And now I think it's time for this jingle to end.
Hello, my name's Ken Corder, and I'm filling in for Adam Buxton today because, sadly, his scheduled guest, the actor Paddy Considine, has had to pull out of the show at the very last minute. This was apparently due to problems on the set of his new film, Pipkins, in which Paddy has stretched himself to his psychological limit in order to deliver a very intense portrayal of Hartley Hare. And when Adam heard that Paddy had cancelled, he got very upset. He became enraged, then depressed, and then depraged, and then he locked himself in his shed, and he's now refusing to come out for the programme, which is very sad. So this morning I got a call from Mark Thompson, and he said, Kenny, the host of our number one radio show, Big Mixtape, has gone mental, locked himself in his shed, so I was hoping you might be able to fill in for him. And I said, Marky, I've got to be honest with you, yeah, I'm still pretty teed off with the BBC after the way they ended Blake 7. Isn't there anyone else that you could ask? He said, Kenko, you know as well as I do, there's only three people out there with the sheer personality and chutzpah to cover Big Mixtape. Yeah, there's Graham Norton, but he can't do it because he's hosting two award ceremonies, three elimination talent shows and a public execution. There's Rusty Lee, but she's in the studio with Rick Rubin working on her comeback album, Rusty Never Sleeps, featuring two solid hours of cooking and laughing. And there's you, Kenny Corder, the man behind some of the most influential movie projects of all time, including Speeding on the Needle Bliss, Baddie Slappers and Jetpack Willy the Movie. I said, OK, Marco, you've got me over a barrel. I'll do it, but on one condition. You go back and you reshoot the ending of Blake 7 and you make it so they don't all die in a meaningless bloodbath after discovering that Blake's a traitor. He said, all right, Kenko, consider it done. So here I am. Bongo, celebrating the mystical link today between music and the movies for this special Big Mixtape, which I have called A Proper Mix Now. A Proper Mix Now. You see, it's like Apocalypse Now. It sounds vaguely similar to Apocalypse Now. Thank you very much to Senna's Elbow on the blog for the inspiration there. And thanks so much to everyone who has suggested titles for this week's tape. And indeed, those who were kind enough to pose questions for me on the blog and on Twitter, some of which I'll do my best to answer throughout today's show. But now, let's continue with the first of many tunes today, featuring the talents of some of the movie industry's finest thespians. lesbians. I love saying that word because it sounds a tiny bit like lesbians. That's funny. Here's a number now from the soundtrack to the 1977 film version of Paint Your Wagon, later remade as Pimp Your Wagon, starring Tim Westwood. This is Lee Marvin with his unusual voice and wandering star.
I was born star. I was born under a wandering star. Wheels are made for rolling, mules are made to pack. I've never seen a sight that didn't look better looking back.
Now, Lee Marvin is, of course, just one in a very long and illustrious list of screen actors who have squeezed their phenomenal gifts into the arena of pure music. I mean, it stands to reason. If someone is a good actor, they'll almost certainly be very good at music, OK? Just look at Bruce Willis, for example, or Eddie Murphy, Jennifer Lopez, a.k.a. J-Lump, Keanu Reeves and his band Dogstar, and Juared Leto and his band 30 Seconds from Mars. Exciting. Imagine being 30 Seconds from Mars and all the music you'd listen to before you got to Mars. That's what Juared Leto's band is all about. Kylie Minogue, she got so very good at music that people have almost forgotten now that she was once considered the finest actress of all time, as her performances in The Delinquents and Street Fighter the movie will readily attest. Another example, just a few short years ago, if you'd said Johansson, you'd probably have assumed that I was greeting the girly boy brothers responsible for the smash hit Mbop. But now, that name is of course more commonly associated with Scarlett, the sultry, pouty star of Girl with a Pearl Earring, Eight-Legged Freaks, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, Lost in Translation, Home Alone 3 and Iron Man 2. As well as being a fine young actress, Scarlett is also carving out a successful career in music, and in 2008 she released an album of Tom Waits covers entitled Anywhere I Lay My Head, which was received by the pundits with plaudits. In fact, Tom Waits himself was apparently so impressed with the results that he insisted on providing the theme tune for this year's Scarlett-based blockbuster Iron Man 2. In the end, however, the producers went for more AC/DC, as you will know if you've seen the film, and Tom's track has sadly never been heard. Until now, that is. Tom actually sent me a copy in return for The Shoe of a Tramp and a Rusty Euphonium. So let's have a listen to his Iron Man 2 theme music.
Prepare for excitement. Tony Stark is back. But the man in the Iron Mask is under attack. His heart needs replacing. The army want his suit. And Mickey Rourke is after him with laser whips to boot. Sam Rockwell hires Mickey Rourke to build a load of robots. Mickey builds them, and there's a lot of big explosions and some romance with Pepper Potts. She thinks Tony needs to get his act together. Iron Man 2, Iron Man 2, if excitement's what you crave, then this movie's for you. Did I mention things get blown up and Tony makes wise cracks? But it's very, very long, so you'd better take some snacks.
Wonderful stuff there from Tom Waits. I think it's a shame that never got used, but hey-ho, c'est la vida loca. Here is Scarlett Johansson now herself, with her surprisingly deep voice, singing Tom Waits's Falling Down.
Don't ask for silverware. Don't ask for nothing. Go on, put your ear to the ground. You'll be hearing that sound.
Now from a screen siren to a super hunk as we consider the work of Russell Rusty Crowe. Like most people, I think, I was incredibly excited when I found out that the star of Gladiators and Neighbours had a band. What kind of extraordinary music, I wondered, would be created by a man who on screen was so fiery, unpredictable and intense, and off screen was so fiery, unpredictable and intense. My excitement extremified when I discovered that his band were called 30-odd Foot of Grunts, named after some slang that Russell had picked up in the dubbing suite for the remarkable film Virtuosity. And what was more, they were a proper band, yeah? Tofog wasn't some vanity project for Russell, even though he was the lead singer and an internationally well-known film star. No, Rusty made it clear from the get-set that he was no more important in 30-odd Fog than Mike, Derwin, Crispy Jonathan or Pegleg. I couldn't be bothered to find out what the real names of the rest of the band actually were, but it's probably something like that. The point is, 30-odd Foot of Grunts was not just about some incredibly famous guy who occasionally punches people and throws phones. Odd Fog was about music. Unfortunately, in these cynical times, the self-appointed critics and the haters found that hard to believe, but they soon fell silent when they heard the songs. Songs like the searingly confessional She's Not Impressed from 1998's Gaslight LP, in which Russell admits that he wants babies, just not right now.
I want babies, just not right now. I want babies, just not right now. Just not right now. No, just not right now.
It's something that a lot of men can relate to. They want babies, just not right now. Or let's take for another example of Russell's genius, All the White Circles from 2003's Other Ways of Speaking, which finds Rusty taking all the white circles from the deep dark blue background and throwing them into the air just to see where they come down.
Take all the white circles from the deep dark blue background, throw them into the air just to see where they come down. I said there was emotion, I didn't get specific. I'm told cowgirls know when to sing and when to listen.
I wish you could hear more than just a few seconds of these songs, but they're so intense that our producer is worried they may actually damage the BBC's equipment if I play any of them in their entirety. But I urge you to seek them out, I really do, particularly 2001's Bastard Life or Clarity, which is essential listening for anyone who's been forced to choose between those two things. I know some of you guys out there will have done. Heck, I know I have. I'm just glad that Russell has too, and he's done a load of mid-tempo rock songs about it. Okay, wow, that was heavy. Let's lighten things up a little bit with a screen band who have blurred the lines between authenticity, parody, clever, and stupid. I'm talking about the extraordinary Spinal Tap, here performing as the Thamesmen. Now, of course, an actor's ability to assume a variety of accents is one of the most powerful arrows in his or her quiver. It's little wonder, then, that when actors decide to enter the world of music, they are extremely excited by the prospect of delivering songs in all kinds of amusing accents. Though it's frowned upon now by the PC police, in the old days there was nothing more amusing and enjoyable than having a bash at some approximation of a West Indian accent. For example, in 1957, when the Calypso craze was at its height, Peter Sellers decided to engage in some innocent clowning on a track called Boiled Bananas and Carrots. Here's a little clip.
Porkchop said, oh, I do feel bad, he said, and my mother with a tear replied,
hello, darling, what would you like for a pick-me-up?
And he jumped out of bed and cried, I tell you what, he cried, boiled bananas and carrots, that's it, oh, boiled bananas and carrots. That is the stuff for your daddy.
Good clean fun there from Peter Sellers. And here's the actor Danny Kaye with the Andrews Sisters on the track Civilization Bongo Bongo Bongo, which asks the question, who are the real savages in this crazy, mixed-up world? And in the process, gives Danny Kaye the chance to pronounce the word magazine the way it would actually have been pronounced by someone living in the Congo, possibly.
I look through a magazine the missionary's wife concealed.
Magazine? What happens?
I see how people who are civilized bung you with automobiles.
You know you can get hurt that way, Daniel?
At the movies they have got to pay many coconuts to see.
What do they see, Danny?
Uncivilized pictures that the newsreel takes of me.
So, bongo, 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 he don't wanna leave the Congo. No, 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 no. Bingo, bango, bongo, he's so hoppy in the jungle, he refused to go.
Yes, it always makes me hoppy as well whenever I hear that song. Danny Kaye and the Andrews Sisters with Civilization. I think it's a shame that more wealthy white actors don't have a go at pretending to be working class West Indians, because it always makes them sound, you know, extremely groovy and with it, as far as I'm concerned. By way of further proof, here's a track from Robert Mitchum's album, Calypso, It's Like So, ... in which Robert explains in a grotesque parody of a Jamaican accent that the best way to be happy is to marry an ugly woman because she's unlikely to be unfaithful and is probably an excellent cook. In fact, I once suggested to Colleen Nolan that this should be the new theme tune to Loose Women, but she threw her Chardonnay in my face and punched me in the nipples. Here's Robert Mitchum.
From a logical point of view, better marry a woman uglier than you.
From a logical point of view, always marry a woman uglier than you.
If a man that's not your friend say that you have no taste, marry an ugly woman above disgrace. One who is cute looking, barbarous and rough, with skin like alligator, bumpy and tough. Pigeon toe bowleg across in her eye, she got two lips that look like a big bow tie. Boy, from a logical point of view.
Now it's time to take a look at some of the thousands of questions that have been pouring in for me on the blog, which incidentally is bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe if you'd like further information about this programme, track listing, etc., etc., etc. Here's a question from the Noon Barrier. Hello, Noon Barrier. He says, Ken, I'm going to watch Daybreakers over the weekend. Is it any good? The trailer look good. Ethan Hawke seems nice. Is he? Well, Noon Barrier, allow me to respond succinctly to each of your points in order. It's okay. Trailers always do. That's their job. And yes, he's lovely if a little pretentious. Here's a question now from Nick, who writes, Ken, will there be a two-disc edition of Speeding on the Needle Bliss? And what extras will there be? Good question, Nick. Thank you so much for asking it. I'm pleased to say that we have been working on the Blu-ray release of Needle Bliss, which of course was my breakout feature and told the story of two lesbian jungle DJs who are addicted to heroin and get involved with the bum drug deal. The Blu-ray is, as we speak, being put together by Totti Max, who are a great company. They've put out all my stuff so far. And yes, there will be a two-disc edition for supermarkets and public toilets. But for fans, collectors and the mentally challenged, we're putting out a 10-disc set in a giant carbon-neutral syringe-shaped plastic case, which doubles as a handbag. As far as extras go, very excitingly, I can tell you there's going to be a director's cut, which is over 6 hours long and features the restored Kaplunk scene, as well as the whole subplot with Katie Puckrick being imprisoned by Craig Charles in his funky bunker, which everyone thought had been lost, and myself included, in fact, until a few months ago, I found it lying there on a DVD beneath a stack of TV Quicks in the basement. There's also a documentary which traces the beginnings of the film, the writing of the film, the filming of the film, the release of the film, the impact of the film, and shows clips of the film in between shots of people in the film talking about the film. There's several commentary tracks on everything on the Blu-rays by me and Jenny Powell and Steve Jones from T4. There's several quite bad music videos on there. There's an interactive game that you'd have to be criminally insane to actually play. There's a version of the film made entirely with putty that someone posted on YouTube. And there's cast and crew biogs. I'm hoping there's going to be a free sachet of smack too, but that's still up in the air. A couple of the people at Totty Max have got a bit of a problem with that one. So there you go. Hope that answers your question, Nick, and thanks very much for it. I'll be answering more of your questions later in the programme, but right now, here's a little film-related megamix for this week's movie-based tape. So please, switch off your mobiles, and remember, thieves are silent. They used to say that in films. Remember, there was a cartoon and there was a snake who would come in behind the seats. Thieves are silent. I'm remembering something from the olden days and saying it now. It's funny. Cartoon, thieves are silent. Do you remember? I'm remembering something else from the olden days and saying it now. It's funny. Okay.
May we remind you that for the convenience of those patrons who prefer not to smoke, seating areas on the right-hand side of this auditorium have been designated as no-smoking areas. Your cooperation is appreciated.
Now it's time for ice cream. Or maybe some nuts.
This is no time for siesta. This is time for fun. This is no time for siesta. This is time for fun. This is no time for siesta. This is time for fun. This is no time for siesta. This is time for fun.
Elvis Presley there, concluding a short mix that included The Passions' I'm in Love with a German Film Star, the banjo stylings of Steve Martin from his 2009 album The Crow, and finally The King with Fun in Acapulco. And that's a track that for me is bittersweet, I suppose, because it brings back memories of a time when I was struggling with quite a serious problem with Malibu, which threatened to turn me from a genius into a monster like Jeff Goldblum in The Fly. I don't think I was an alcoholic, but I was certainly really, really into Malibu. I've never really spoken about this before, and for some reason I feel, you know, very, very able to do so now that I'm on my own in this studio. I hope you won't mind if I share. I started to tipple when I was writing Speeding on the Needle Bliss, which, as you know, was my breakout feature. It won the Young Black Urban Filmmaker Award for me in 94. That film featured a lot of guns and violence and jungle music, and I thought it would help me immerse myself in that twilight world if I drank a lot of exotic booze. And for a while it worked a treat. You know, I would drink a couple of bottles of hooch, followed by some jello shots, washed down with a Metz, which I enjoyed for the Judda. And then I'd finish with a couple of those cocktails you get in bags, which I find fun and classy. And then I remember very clearly one night a friend of mine from Shed 7 came round with a bottle of Malibu. And I'd heard of people getting hooked on the stuff, so I was, you know, I was wary, because I do have a very addictive and mildly psychotic personality. But he was very persuasive, and he said, "Kenny, it's totally safe." So I thought, what the hey? And I had a glass with blackcurrant. Well, that pretty much tore my head off. At first I was sick, but apparently that happens to a lot of people when they first take Malibu. After that, if I'm honest, and I'm not encouraging anyone else to try it, I'm just talking about my own experiences, it was pretty amazing. I mean, I was seeing palm trees and sunsets and limbo dancers and beaches with Bette Midler. And I had a kind of warm tropical glow around me all the time. And immediately I couldn't wait to get back to that place. You know, I was hooked. I was coconutty. It was Coco Loco. It was tough for me for a while, you know, and I really lost the plot for a while. But I remember I bounced back. I mean, Needle Bliss went down incredibly well. You know, we got the Young Black Urban Filmmaker Award. And then I got back into TV with some great projects. It was a sitcom I did called Oh Carol, which was all about three versions of Carol Vorderman living in the same house together, which we did with Split Screen. That was a big hit for me. And then there was a reality show called Soft Cell, in which Mark Almond went round prisons and did makeovers on people's cells there, which also did very well. And after that, I kind of got out of the whole Malibu thing. But it was tough. It was tough for a while, I'll be honest with you. Okay, wow. It was good to share that. Thanks, listeners. I feel really good about myself. This is Ken Corder here, filling in for Adam Buxton on this week's Big Mixtape. Time for some more movie-related music now, and this is a track from a CD that came out in 1998, and it's by George Martin, who was basically recreating his favourite Beatles songs with some of his favourite personalities in the world of entertainment. I want to play a couple of tracks from this remarkable CD, and I'm going to start with a version of I Am the Walrus by the rubber-faced loon, Jim Carrey.
Sitting in an English garden, waiting for the sun. If the sun don't come, you get your tan from standing in the English rain.
I am the Eggman. They are the Eggman. I am the walrus.
I imagine that when George Martin proposed using Jim Carrey for that track, a lot of people imagined that perhaps he might go over the top with it. But no, he turns in an unusually restrained performance there, which adds some much-needed comedy value to the original track, which was rather short on laughs, in my opinion. Here's another section now of another track from this remarkable CD of Beatles covers by the luminaries of the entertainment industry. And this is Sean Connery doing his business all over In My Life.
There are places I'll remember all my life. Though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone and some remain.
He does a fairly good job there, Connery, but I would have done it more. There are places I'll remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever. Not for better. Some have gone and some remain. All these places have their moments with lovers and friends. I still can recall! Some are dead and some are living.
In my life I've loved them all.
That's how I would have done it. But I never got the call from George and we've fallen out since then. I was very upset that he never gave me a chance to put my stamp on that particular LP. This is Kenny Corder here, very pleased to be filling in for Adam Buxton on his Big Mix tape this week, and we are celebrating the link between music and the movies. Speaking of movies, this year, of course, sees the departure of Jonathan Ross from the BBC's film review programme, Film 81. A lot of people have asked me if I was at all disappointed that, once again, the Beeb, in their wisdom, have decided to ignore my 37th application for the job and go instead with Claudia Winkleman as the new presenter. Well, no, is the answer. Not really. I think Winkles has the potential to do an absolutely marvellous job. I really do. I mean, she's fairly young and she can see. But I must admit that I can't help feeling that after about, I don't know, 25 years working in this industry on some of the greatest films ever made, including, by the way, Sahara, Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Curly Sue, that I might perhaps have been just a tiny bit more qualified to take over that job than the Winkle Monster. There, I've said it. OK, it's out. But, you know, I suppose it's not a total surprise that they went with Claudia, especially looking at the shortlist, which most people haven't seen, but I got a copy from Dick and Dom, who smuggled it out of the BBC for me to look at. And I think they probably made the right choice in the end. I mean, here are some of the people that they were considering as the new host of Film 81. Graham Norton, of course, Piers Morgan, Fern Britton, Fern Cotton, an actual fern in a spangly pot. That new Liverpudlian comedian with the big white teeth from panel shows and Michael McIntyre's Comedy Road Accident. The fellow from Rude Tube. Justin Lee Collins' beard. Justin can't do it, apparently, because he's busy trying to reunite the cast of Graham's Gang. A talented brick called Mike with a little voice box that they've installed in the front. Lembit Opik, Lisa Rogers and Boggins. Lembit Opik would have been good, I think, but in the end, I think they made the right choice with Winkle Mistress. Wishing her all the best for that job. And, you know, when she's finished in around 6 months or so, I'll be very happy to step in. Just a little note there to the BBC, if they are listening, the Pratts.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear.
Now, I've got a few more questions here from some of the listeners to this programme. Thank you so much for posting your questions on the blog. And let me see, Lazy Wolf Eyes has a good question. He says, Ken, you must have met so many celebrities in your time. Who was the biggest ponce? Do you have any juicy gossip you don't mind sharing? Well, Lazy Wolf Eyes, that's a great question. Yeah, I mean, wow, I've worked with pretty much everyone, I guess, at some point, and some of them, inevitably, are absolutely giant ponces. But it's tricky. It's tricky dishing the dirt in this business, you know? I don't want to find myself in Cannes one day standing in a lift with Carey Mulligan and she says, oh, thanks very much for telling everyone that I have a removable hairpiece that slots into a square hole in my skull like a play person, you know? I mean, I was impressed when I found out that she did. Let's see. What can I tell you that won't get me in terrible trouble? Well, speaking of Carey Mulligan, her boyfriend, Shia LaBeouf, carries around a tiny knitted version of himself, which he calls Gonky. And before he makes any big decisions, he asks Gonky what he thinks. Gonky, should I do the new Indiana Jones movie, even though it's almost certainly going to be a giant pile of dog plops? He does Gonky's voice as well, obviously, because Gonky, you know, isn't real, but it's helpful for Shia.
Yes, you should do,
is usually what Gonky says. Gonky, should I do Wall Street 2 with Oliver Stone, even though it's almost guaranteed to be an even more giant pile of dog manure?
Yes, you should do,
says Gonky. And then that's what Shia does. Not many people know that. Actually, it drove Oliver Stone mad on the set of Wall Street 2 because Gonki more or less disagreed with everything that Oliver had to say, you know, like most people do, I think. But Gonki always got the final word because Gonki actually wrote the script for Wall Street 2. He also wrote the script for all the Transformers films. Actually, Gonki did everything on the Transformers films. He directed them, produced them, did all the sound effects, did the drawings. Most people think that it was Michael Bay and a huge team of CG experts and stuff like that. It wasn't. It was Gonki. So there you go, Lazy Wolf Eyes. A little piece of exclusive juicy gossip for you that it was my pleasure to divulge. That was the film star Mae West with her giant double breast and her version of Twist and Shout from the 1966 album Way Out West, which I strongly recommend if you feel life is passing you by far too quickly. That cut, for example, was only 2 minutes and 37 seconds, but I'm sure you'll agree it felt much, much longer. So it's great VFM.
Big Mixtape is what you're listening to. Adam Buxton is the host and he made it for you.
This is a movie-related subject that has an impact on all of our lives. I'm talking about climate change. And, of course, the most fun climate change film, the one that's really started the climate change ball rolling, was An Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore. I love all Al Gore's films, but I suppose An Inconvenient Truth is my favourite one. I love it. I watch it almost every week with a big box of popcorn and, you know, I crank up the surround sound and switch on all the lights in the front room to make it seem more like a kind of exciting event. And I settle down there and I watch An Inconvenient Truth and get a little bit depressed. But then, you know, there's some fun stuff at the end, isn't there? The ways that you can fix things. And I thought it would be a fun thing to do today to give a few tips of my own for what you could do to make the Earth a better place and stop this planet from being killed by selfishness, I suppose, is what I'm talking about. Particularly driving. I mean, driving is something that I love to do, and it's a staple of the movies, of course. Road movies, large cars are intimately associated with the exciting world of the cinema, but it is not strictly good for the planet. So here are some top tips from me, Kenny Corder, for how to minimise the damage you're doing in your marvellous giant car. First of all, it's very important to be carbon neutral when you're driving in your car. Yes, you're driving a car, but if you drive it in a carbon neutral way, that's good for the planet. The first thing you can do is make a badge that says, I'm carbon neutral, and wear that. The bigger the better. If you can make it out of oak, that's probably the best because it's, you know, it's going to be more durable. It just stands to reason. Secondly, if you really must drive, do your best to avoid heavy traffic. That is where all those harmful emissions build up the worst, okay? Instead, drive in the countryside, like Jeremy Clarkson, or in the desert, like Thelma and Louise, which again is a good thing to do if you love your movies. Just drive around there in the desert. Just avoid cliffs, I suppose, would be a top tip. Don't go plunging directly off the cliff like Thelma and Louise did, but you can have all your faintly lesbo fun before that, if you wish. Top tip three. Cut your journey short by stopping before you arrive at your destination, okay? And that's going to just save a huge amount of very harmful emissions from being emitted into the ionosphere. And you might be thinking, okay, well, what am I going to do if I haven't arrived at my destination? I still need to get where I'm going. Okay, calm down, calm down. You just take a taxi the rest of the way. It's not a big problem. But what you've done is you've cut down on your emissions, and your emissions are what are causing the big problem. So that's what we're dealing with. Top tip four. Once in a while, just try sitting in the car without turning on the engine at all. Now, that'll cut your emissions drastically, and you'll be amazed how much more relaxing it is. I mean, there's nil road rage. You can sit there and listen to Chris Moyles for as long as you want, and it's really very, very relaxing and good for the planet. It's positively good for the planet if you're just sitting in the car there. And finally, if you really do have to drive and start your engine, try, if you can, to look anxious or sad when you're behind the wheel. It sends out a very important message to other drivers, which says, I know the damage I'm doing and I feel terrible about it. Okay? I feel awful. It might seem silly, but then the whole notion of global warming seemed silly a few years ago, yeah? And now who's laughing, right? Not the flipping polar bears and the ice creatures, I'll tell you that much, okay? More music right now, and one with a climate connection, rather cleverly. This is from 1969, when it won the award for Best Original Music at the mighty Oscar ceremony. And it comes from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. The music is by Burt Bacharach, with lyrics by Hal David. But this is BJ Thomas with Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did me some talking to the sun, and I said I didn't like the way he got things done.
Of all the musical genres, the one that seems really to resonate most deeply within the hearts of the male acting community is the blues. The music that started out being played by underprivileged African Americans now has some of its chief exponents in the form of very rich white film stars, people like Bruce Willis, whose album The Return of Bruno is generally considered to be one of the best blues albums of all time, if you include all the blues albums ever made in that list. But even Bruce Willis knows that when it comes to sheer authenticity, coupled with punching and kicking prowess, not even Rusty Crowe can hold a candle to the sheer blues power wielded by the star of Hard to Kill, Out for a Kill, Kill Switch, and Driven to Kill, Steven Seagal. The action movie actor, producer, writer, martial artist, deputy sheriff, and ponytail enthusiast has so far released two albums of his astonishingly powerful blues. There was 2005's Songs from the Crystal Cave, and 2006's Mojo Priest. Like his movies, his music certainly takes no prisoners, and if it did, it would probably high-kick them in the face, then brutally kill them for being naughty. He's a wicked guitar player, Mr. Seagal. In fact, he was once described by Muddy Waters as being good at the guitar. It's a genuine quote there. And he has a powerful voice that reminds one of reeds and wind. For four long years, blues fans everywhere have been holding their breath and watching the blues news for news of new blues from the Seagal camp. Well, today I'm excited to say I have for you exclusive clips of brand new tracks that were sneaked out of the recording studio by Dick and Dom, who were pretending to be clearing up bogeys. The first that I'm about to play you deals with Steven Seagal's dress sense.
I'm Steven Seagal, I'm a sexy man, and I wear a kind of a silky tent. Doggy. I'm Steven Seagal, I'm a sexy man, and when I'm on stage I wear a big purple silky kind of a tent. Oh, some people say I play the blues okay, others say I'm excellent. Doggy. I'm a sexy man.
A clip of Sexy Man there, a new song by Steven Seagal. Here is a clip of another. This deals with Steven Seagal's role in the film Executive Decision, in which he plays Lieutenant Colonel Austin Travis, who leads a team, including Kurt Russell, to intercept a hijacked plane.
I was killed unexpectedly early in the film Executive Decision. I was sucked from a plane. I was dispatched with surprise and haste in the film Executive Decision. David Suchet hijacked a plane with Halle Berry in it. One minute I appeared to be starring alongside Kurt Russell, the next I was missing. Let's hear it for Oliver Platt's Sweaty Face.
Exciting stuff. Finally, here is a brand new track that is a masterclass in brooding blues power and finds Seagal firmly asserting the awesome majesty of his ponytail. This is Ponytail Man.
I'm a ponytail man, baby. I got the biggest ponytail in the place. Look at it, it's giant, greasy. I'm a ponytail man, baby. I got the most biggest ponytail in the place. I actually cut it off a giant pony. It's an actual ponytail. Ooh, don't stand behind me in a high wind, baby. My ponytail gonna hit you in the face. Punching and kicking, rock and roll. Ooh, doggy.
Steven Seagal with the as yet unreleased Ponytail Man. Thank you so much to Dick and Dom for sneaking that stuff out of the studio there. I do hope they don't get caught by Steven Seagal, otherwise there will be some punching and kicking, which they almost certainly won't be able to deal with. At least I think Dick probably could deal with it, but Dom is going to buckle, I think, and there's going to be snot flying everywhere. Here's some more music right now, a little mega mix, which kicks off with Monty Python.
When that's a round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines and call the scenes of footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are for the table. So many times we give them rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm.
We need to screen what we've got. It's invite some regular people, just some random off-the-street types, and see what real people think of this.
I don't know, Toby. We really have a long way to go. You still need to get a lot more footage, and it's probably a little premature to start screening.
Okay, then we can invite serious intellectual types.
We're not ready,
hip alternative types who will understand the process better.
We are not ready.
Well, I need to see this with an audience.
What's an audience gonna tell you?
I don't know. Maybe they'll like it.
That poxy demo crew haven't used the coaxial inch to back the main line, have they? They've only nosed up the mainframe couplet, nosed it right up.
Nancy Sinatra there with You Only Live Twice from the James Bond film of the same name. Before that, you heard Belle and Sebastian from the soundtrack to the film Storytelling, for which they wrote a great deal of music and most of it was rejected by the film's eccentric director, Todd Solondz. Fun fact, before that, you heard Monty Python from the film The Holy Grail with the Knights of the Round Table, later finally fully realised by Sanjeev Bakshar on the West End stage, of course. This is Ken Corder here, very pleased to be sitting in for Adam Buxton on this weekend's Big Mixtape. And I've got time just to answer a couple more questions from the bloggers very briefly now. Let's see. Foxy Stoat says, I'd like to ask Ken this. When you are on set, do you have any special personal requirements, much like a band might request on their rider? That's a good question, Foxy Stoat. Well, yes, I suppose is the answer. I mean, I like to think I'm a man of simple tastes and not too outrageous with my requests, you know, not too much of a diva. But I do have a few basic requirements that enable me to get on and do the job as quickly and efficiently as possible. That's what it's all about in the movie industry. And to help me do that, I require, well, one of the basic things I require, like most people, is a large portable fridge, which should be stocked at all times with raspberry-flavoured hooch. and 16 packets of beef and mustard Brannigans, which need to be chilled until they are almost freezing. I like to place one of the Brannigans on my tongue and allow it to melt, and then I crunch it. I require a frosting of Frost, David Frost, if possible, and if that's not there, then I get very, very angry, and I have fired people in the past for serving me warm Brannigans. Something that gets me very upset. But I don't think I'm weird. I don't think that's a weird thing. I think that's something that most people can relate to. When I'm on set, I like to listen to chill out music. I have it pumped into the set, you know, at all times, even when there's a scene going on. It's very expensive. A lot of the time we have to redub a lot of the scenes because they're ruined by the chill out music, you know, the 07 or the Air, which totally ruins the actor's lines. Some of the actors get a bit upset about it, and they say, why do you have to play sexy boy while I'm doing my scene? It's putting me off. And then I get very angry, and that ruins the chilled atmosphere, and then they realise they should never have questioned the chilling in the first place. My favourite track, which I really find helps me chill, is Summertime by DJ Jazzy Jeff and The Fresh Prince, of course. I mean, Will is a close friend of mine. Actually, that's the time that I chill most. When I really chilled is when I'm on holiday with Will Smith and with Jada in their Hovering Gold house. And Will is probably the most chilled person I know, really. Unlike a lot of people who invite you on holiday, then proceed to be as unchilled as it's possible to be, Vanessa Feltz, asking you to help out with the cooking or the washing up or organising after dinner games and such, you know. But Will appreciates that chilling is a very personal choice. He lets everyone do exactly what they want all day, Big Willie style. And then sometime in the afternoon, he'll come out and say, would anybody like to join me for some frontin', maybe a little maxin', followed by some chillin' in the car I spent all day waxin'? Yeah, because that's how he speaks. And to me, that is properly chillocious behaviour. Now, the proper thing to do, I suppose, at this point, this being a music programme and on the radio, etc., would be to play Summertime by DJ Jazzy Jeff and The Fresh Prince. But instead, I want to play you something almost equally chilled. And it's a track to get us back to our theme today by an actress who has stepped seamlessly into the world of music. And she's a very beautiful actress as well, with a fun name. I'm talking about Zooey Deschanel. Sometimes people say, oh, it's pronounced Zoe. Wrong! It's pronounced Zooey. And even though it's spelt with only two O's, you actually have to extend it. Otherwise, she gets very, very upset and starts crying and throwing ukuleles. This is a track from an album that was released this year, entitled Volume 2, She and Him, with If You Can't Sleep.
If you can't sleep, I'll be there in your dreams. I'll be there in your dreams if you can't sleep at all. And in your dreams, I'll touch your cheek and lay
Thank you so much for joining me today, and I'm going to leave you with a special treat in the form of a Golden Globe nominated theme. And I love to listen to any music that's been nominated for awards, especially Oscars, because as we all know, an Oscar is the pinnacle of any achievement, both cinematic and musical. You know, all Oscar nominated movies are ergo the best in their field, and it's the same for music. So I'm going to leave you with something that was not nominated for an Oscar but a Golden Globe, and that's 75% as good. This is the theme from Clint Eastwood's fun racism movie from 2008, Gran Turismo. Jazz goblin Jamie Cullum tinkles the ivories on this track, and Clint's voice sounds like a storm rolling in over a sea of phlegm. I've never actually made it to the end of this song, I have to admit to you, but maybe today will be different. Thank you so much for listening. I love you. I'm going now. Bye!
So tenderly, your story is nothing more than what you see or what you've done or will become. Standing strong, do you belong in your skin? Just wondering, gentle now.
Sorry, listeners, just have to fade that one out there. For some reason, every time I listen to that song, I just get an overwhelming urge to listen to The Muppets. I don't know what it is. I really am going now. Bye!
Boogies!
Growing up, I hear so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side. Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide.
You can't please all the people all the time, but we hope we'll please most of you most of the time. Anyway, see you soon.
Hey, how you doing, listeners? Adam Buxton back again. Just finished listening to that podcast that James emailed me with Ken Corder. Okay, well, it is what it is, I suppose. I mean, it's not a proper radio show, is it? It sounds like something off Radio 2. I mean, you know, what is it? Dermot O'Leary? It's like flipping heck, Tucker. Anyway, we'll be back to normal next week. We've got a proper guest in there. I'm not going to say who it is. I've learned my lesson, okay? I think it's someone really good. But if it turns out to be Jimmy Cranky, then you'll know something went wrong, all right? Incidentally, I want to say that I was listening to the podcast of last week's programme, just a bit of business here at the end of the podcast before I go, and I sounded mentile, going on about that guy on the train. Also, I felt really bad because I thought, well, what if by some weird coincidence, the guy actually listens to this podcast and identifies himself having sat opposite me and then hears me like rambling about it in that demented way. So if by some weird chance he did hear that, I apologize. I'm sorry. I went temporarily insane and overreacted because I was just reaching for something to rant about at the beginning of the podcast. Also, I don't know how this is going to reach people overseas because they can't download the podcast anymore. I want to apologize to those people. There's been some kind of mix-up, technical, legal mix-up about what you can and can't include in the international podcasts. And now a lot of people have been leaving messages on the blog about the fact they can't download this podcast anymore. I'm so sorry about that. It was unavoidable. We did our absolute best, but we have to ultimately comply with the rules that the BBC laid down. I'm so sorry about that. And maybe I'm hoping there might be some other way that you can get hold of this podcast by the wonders of modern internet networking and friendship schemes. Anyway, far be it from me to encourage anything like that. Thank you so much for downloading this podcast. I'll be with you again next week. Take care. I love you. Bye.
BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Thanks for downloading Adam Buxton's Big Mixtape. If you enjoyed this, why not try John Holmes' podcast? Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.